Greetings, my friends, and welcome to the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. I'm Paula. We teach our kids to share, but what about us, especially if we're gifted, as our guest Simon Sciamma is? In addition to being a Columbia University professor, Simon Sciamma is responsible for two television series for the BBC and PBS, and he wrote the general audience books that accompany them. His many other books of general interest range from a stunning one about Rembrandt to his acclaimed look at the French Revolution, Citizens. In yet another Simon Sciamma's Rough Crossings, Dr. Sciamma gives us the perspective of colonial America's slaves, for whom the British are coming meant freedom. Most people would be delighted to excel in any one of Simon Sciamma's endeavors. How does he account for his impressive output?
It's from sort of a kind of incontinent exuberance, you know, really, that I just really am a greedy person, basically. One has the delight of reading and the delight of writing, and you sort of can't help but doing it in some way. It's sort of a literary equivalent of just being an awful loudmouth or something, you know. I just actually do sort of want to emit observations I might have or jokes I might have, or it's a way of both, I think, educating and also trying to give pleasure. It's as sort of naive as that.
Simon Sciamma is a best-selling and prize-winning author, critic, and broadcaster, as well as being university professor of art history and history at Columbia University. Since 1994, he's provided art criticism and cultural essays for The New Yorker. He regularly contributes to New Republic, Guardian, and The New York Review of Books. Bill Russell and I came to Simon Sciamma by way of his insights into the American experience. What we discovered, as millions of others have, is the immense appeal of Simon Sciamma's charm, wide-ranging intellect, and eagerness to share what he knows. Simon Sciamma, I have recently had the chance to spend a lot of time with cameras, everything from the camera in my funny little telephone to motion picture cameras to landscapes, just a lot of time with cameras. And I have been reminded how vital it is to be thinking, Paula, where's the focus? Is it near focus? Is it far focus? At all the same picture, where's the focus? And as I read Rough Crossings, I had exactly that same sense that I was looking at something deeply familiar, and role focus, it was new.
Mm.
Did you come to it knowing this new picture, new to me?
Mm.
Or is this something that everybody who's not American knows about the American experience?
Absolutely not. It was really embarrassing, actually. It's a wonderfully embarrassing story, although it sounds très snob, very snobby. But, you know, we're all going to have to live with a snobby bit. So, it's 3 months after 9/11, and I'm having lunch at Columbia University in a where I teach, and there is one very old room. At least it's been redone in the 1910, as if it were even older than that. Columbia, I should explain, and the relevance of this will be clear, I hope, in a second. Columbia was a British foundation. It was called King's College. Mm-hmm. It was founded by charter from King George II, the dullest. Sometimes it's good to be dull, I think, but he was definitely the dullest of the Georges.
And it's in New York City.
It's in New York City, right. And there is a charter room, the original charter of the university from the King of Britain, is there. So a friend of mine happened to be Consul General. Actually, a man called Sir Thomas Harris, the cleverest historian I've ever known. And we go, that's true from childhood onwards. And he was Consul General during 9/11, in which about 80 Brits were killed in 9/11. So there was a very strong feeling of communion between my own sense of being half English, half American, spending half my life here, half my life there, was very raw at that particular moment. So there was somebody visiting, somebody being a junior prince. Junior prince sounds like a pop star. This was Prince Andrew, the younger brother of Prince Charles. And so we're having grand lunch. So my friend Tom Harris, the Consul General, assuming, of course, I knew about this story, said, well, your royal highnesship, whatever the hell it was, or your royal highness, he said, trying to get, you know, groveling brownie points, you know, you, of course, knew, you may or may not have known that at the end of the war, the for independence, there were 3,000 freed slaves in New York, all of whom had been living free under British protection, married legally, children baptized, carrying these little certificates, born free behind British lines. But of course, Simon, he said cheerily, having not prompted me, knows all about this. So, so about which I didn't know a damn thing.
So the junior Brits turned to you.
Right, so annoying. So I had to kind of bluff my way. And of course I said, you know, with disgraceful aplomb, I said, I do, of course, actually, but it's such an immense story that we would take several lunches to be able to tell you, Your Royal Highnessship. And I had to sort of feebly, and I thought, what the hell is this story? And Tom had come across it in a wonderful book called Gotham, History of New York City, written by Michael Wallace and somebody else whose name, please forgive me, I've forgotten. And it's sort of briefly mentioned in the chapter on the Revolutionary War and New York.
So you were shamed into writing a book.
I was incredibly shamed because I've been thinking about the Anglo-American name. It's very good in one sort of dotage, or what Gore Vidal calls rather beautifully the springtime of one's senility. I love that, which is definitely me. To be reminded about the vast, you know, plateaus of ignorance that one has. And this is something... I was thinking about a book about the Anglo-American relationship, a book of what I call post-divorce custody battles, really. Who owns Shakespeare? Who owns the idea of culture? And the first one was who owns, you know, whose version of freedom, what in the 19th century, in the 1800s, gets more usefully delivered to the rest of the world? John Stuart Mill's and Mr. Gladstone's, or Jefferson's and Lincoln's and so on. And so I was sort of thinking in a vague, mushy sort of way about all this. And I, you know, I was absolutely thunderstruck by this story. And I just did what sort of dumb historians do. I followed the bibliographic trail. And the bibliographic trail led me into the archive. And it was one of the, you know, some books, I'm sure other writers have told you this, or you knew it for yourself, where you go kind of hunting for a story or hunting for... And then there are other books that really mug you on a street corner. I mean, you're just absolutely, they've been waiting for you, and they whack you and said, it's time you did me. And this was, you know, the first afternoon in the New York Historical Society when I was really just playing with what these sources were like. I opened this commonplace book of Granville Sharp, the British abolitionist, with kind of manuscript transcriptions of what it was like to be at the trial of runaway slaves in London. And it was just... It was, I think it was Carlyle who said the way he wanted to write history was by opening a window, having no introduction in his books, but opening a window and kicking the reader in the rear end so that they went straight through the window. And it was just like that.
Well, that is certainly the way it reads. This is Simon Sharma. We are honored to be with him. There's so much more to be said, including which flavor of freedom was most useful. We'll do that when we return in a moment. Please be with us.